meeting is now being recorded.
Okay, so thank you for joining the IDN Guidelines Working Group call on 9th of February 2017. We have Edmund, Dennis, Satish, and Sarmad on the call. So over to you, Edmund.
Thank you, Sarmad. And I guess I'll start with apologizing for missing last meeting, so I'll need a little bit of help from getting up to speed on where we are. And I see that Matt is not on the call, so Sarmad, you could point us to where we left off and from there. But I guess just look at the chat here. We should start planning for Copenhagen. So that is, I guess we should spend a little bit of time talking about that as well.
Okay. Last time we had basically worked on this section. We'd also worked on the recommendation which was on non-conforming registered domain names, and we'd all finalized the wording and agreed with the wording here. So what I've done is added that, removed it as tentative and added it as number 13. There was an initial discussion about moving it to a more general section. So what I've done is taken it at the end of the document and made a new section 2.10. And so for now called it non-conforming registered domains or domain names. But that's something which we need to discuss, whether this should be at the end of the document or somewhere else. And also what should we call, should it be a separate section? And in that case, whether that, what the name of that section would be. So that's one thing which we need to discuss. And then last time we also discussed the second paragraph, which is harmonization of variant rules. There was some minor changes which were suggested, which have been done by Dennis. They're indicated here in the strike through and the brown color versus the red color. And then now we have this meeting, we were going to talk about cross-script homoglyphs and also the first and the last paragraph, which I think, Edmund, you had submitted by breaking the initial first paragraph into two parts. So that's what the plan is. Up to you. Do you want to briefly talk about Section 2.10, or do you want to go directly into reviewing the changes proposed by Dennis on the second paragraph and then go to the third paragraph and then first two paragraphs? So that's all from my side, I guess.
Thank you so much. I guess let's finalize paragraph 2 and look into 3. Before we jump back to the section, it seems to me that flow might be a little bit better. Or Dennis, since you are somewhat holding the pen on these at this point, do you have thoughts on? Does it make sense to?
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. So are we good with the second paragraph? I guess the harmonization of variant rules across same script IDN tables.
For our last meeting, I updated the certain words. We were the wheels with must or should or shall as applicable, and also introduce the reference to use the Rootson LGR work and other sources.
Okay. It seems pretty clear and concise to me at this point. I don't have any further comments on this. Actually, it looks good to me. Any thoughts from Satish or Samad?
This is Samad. Could I go?
Please go ahead.
Right, okay. So I guess my question was that in the second instance, or I guess the third instance, Dennis, you used a shell rather than a must. Should that be a must, where we are saying, asking registries that if they add another IDN table, they must look at any potential variant relationship. Eventually, it's up to them to decide whether there is one or not, but that's something that really should be done, you know, that must be done, rather than, you know, leaving it to their choice whether they want to do that analysis or not. Asking what other people think about it.
So the spirit is that registries should do the reevaluation, right? And then if they deem that variant rules should be created for both tables, they need to do so. And the use of shall or must, I mean, I read the RFC and their equivalents. I just use shall for diversity and not just sound the must repetitively. but I was thinking this, and Sarma, please help me, because you are, understand the RCEP and PDT processes for TTLDs. When a registry operator decides to offer a new IDN table, they will have to go through RCEP, right? In the case they are already delegated and passed through PDT, and an RCEP process would one of the items that they will look at is not the IDN table in the registry context, right? So I would assume they will ask for more information as far as how is this new language table, does it have any relationship with other previous legacy tables that the registry offered? And this will be the same thing for PDT. So is this something that really we want to put the I think we can put some responsibility onto the registry operators, but ultimately it would be the ICANN RCEP process or the PDT process that will discover these new relationships.
Right. So I think in that context, yes. You know, if we are saying that must and shall are just a different way of saying the same thing, you know, then obviously it doesn't really make too much difference. As far as the reference to PDT and RCEP is concerned, this obviously is not currently done, but if this guideline is put in and it is eventually accepted, then obviously the PDT and RCEP testing processes will be updated to make sure that these are taken care of in that process. However, I think I also want to point out that this is not just applicable to the GTLDs. Eventually, these are also recommendations which are recommended. Well, these guidelines are recommended for other registries as well, for example, the CCTLDs. So I think they should still have some semblance of self-contained rather than dependent on a process like PDT and RCEP, because for CCTLDs, obviously, that is not something which happens. Thank you.
Correct.
Thank you so much, and thank you. I think the word, like, when I read shall, it really means must. And I forgot about what the RFC says, but in English, I guess shall is not so much a should, but a more of a must. But I think for safety, I don't think you need to be elegant and use different words. So probably must would be easier to understand. I think this actually means must, and the result may not be that anything needs to be changed, but the registries must reevaluate. I think with that, I guess, Dennis, are you comfortable with that? In fact, your later questions relate back to once we change this concept to must, I think it resolves the issue anyway. So I while we did talk about the PDT and this RCEP and all that, it's somewhat irrelevant to highlight here, and changing it to must would have addressed the issue, I think, both well, some I've mentioned and then Dennis you mentioned. Dennis, does that make sense to you? If we change it back to must, and I think that whole section we can be done with.
Yes, I'm fine. Like I said, the RFC treats must, require, shall as equivalents. I just use shall for diversity, but yeah, no clear. I mean, people is more comfortable with must. Let's use which I'll change it back to must.
Okay, just shall some, you know, for less, some readers might sound like a variant of should rather than must, then I can understand the reason for that.
Right.
So.
But also we would, I think, on the top of the document, we are introducing, right, that these words are going to be treated per the RFC 2119, so there should not be any discrepancy in terms of how those terms are going to be used. But like I said, no problems, no issues. I'll can change it back to must, and that's fine.
Okay. I guess with that, this section seems fine. In that case, we should we'll go to the cross-script homoglyph labels. I forgot, Samad, whether you mentioned that was covered last time, or we were kind of sidetracked into 2.10, and therefore we haven't looked at the paragraph yet.
Right. So we were we had not started on it. We would okay. Spent half the time on 2.10, and then half our time on harmonization. So this still needs to be discussed from the beginning.
Okay. So why don't, Dennis, you walk us through quickly, and then we'll start the discussion.
Yes, thank you. Okay, so the third section, the cross-script homoglyph labels, addresses the use case where you can create a domain name label using two different scripts. I think one of the examples that we have been discussing is the English word scope, S-C-O-P-E. Yeah, you can register that using pure Latin script, and also using Cyrillic script, using similar glyphs. So this section is addressing that use case. While I was researching about the cases where we are addressing, I mean, I really found that very small cases of homograph attacks using IDNs. So I was a little bit reluctant to increase the force of this section, and that's why I'm using a may and not a should or shall. For register operators to evaluate these rules in terms of the whole script. or whole label evaluation rules. But I mean, I recognize that some of the work group members believe this should be more forceful and force. So I'll open up this for discussion. I'd like to get your feedback in terms of how this would be written, whether stronger than MA or something different. I mean, also, what I also suggested is maybe we want to expand a little bit about this case, but not as a guideline, but as an advisory or of a lesser not as strong as a guideline.
Thank you, Dennis. I guess unfortunately we don't have Matt here. He's probably he'll probably want to weigh in. My question, rather maybe I guess to everyone and Samad as well, whether you know will we the key issue here is probably to avoid the cross-script homoglyphs. The question is whether the previous sections already cover, as Dennis said, already cover all the musts that needs to be there. And really this whole label evaluation is a little bit different, because if we already have the necessary musts up in terms of how we design your repertoire and discussing the variants and all those kind of things, then perhaps you know whole label evaluation rules in fact should it should be more of a may. That I guess is a question to people. And I see Satish is typing and thinks maybe it's probably appropriate. off the top of my head, I guess when Dennis, you explained it in this way, I think it's probably right. But I'm not sure. I understand the motivation. I think we should avoid as much as possible whole label evaluation rules in general. That's just my general preference. Perhaps we might need to position it a little bit differently. In again going back to the section above, which says you must look at this, but you know, and then you may apply, and figure out whether it's needed, and then you know whether it's needed is kind of a may. That might be my immediate it might kind of sound like a knee jerk reaction. I probably want to sleep on it a little bit, but I see Samad's hand up. Samad.
Thank you, Edmund, and thank you, Dennis. I think one of the things I would like to point out is that all these three or four sections now are mutually exclusive. So they were designed to address different items which are not overlapping with each other. That's at least my understanding, which means that each of these paragraphs is trying to contain an issue which is not really addressed by any of these other paragraphs. So that's, I guess, one point I wanted to make. The second is that I think there are two aspects to it. We had an initial email probably discussion of this, but there's a case of new registrations and then there is a case of existing registrations. And as far as new registrations are concerned, you know, I think we are very clear that this is a potential security issue. You know, so because we're not really talking about similarity, we're really talking about homoglyphic variation here. So if there are two labels even accidentally sent out, it creates a situation where end user cannot distinguish between them, even with any kind of expertise, unless they obviously copy it and try to decipher which script is it is. So it's an extreme issue in that sense. Something which for which may be a bit you know, so you know, I was thinking that if it is not a must, maybe a should, where it is a stronger recommendation, especially for the new registrations, and then we can do a may for existing ones, or we already have a guidelines for things which are already existing. I'm not sure whether that is a feasible solution. But in any case, I guess the severity of confusion here is very significant, because we're really talking about things which are exactly the same. Thank you.
Thank you, Samad. I see Dennis stand up, so why don't Dennis, you go ahead first.
Thank you. So what Samad said at the beginning of his observation is correct. These three cases, I mean, the original three sections address a different and mutually exclusive use cases. So about the CrossScript, so it's still, I mean, I'm still thinking that this should be a main and optional thing. And the other reason is to, because it's, I mean, Sarma, you accepted this is extreme cases, right? Because we're talking a very tiny fraction of cases where IDNs can be used for phishing or homograph attacks. And then this is a very extreme case where you can completely spoof a domain name using a different script. Pointing to how registered operator could achieve this is, we suggested let's use the intentional .txt as a source, but we also when we analyzed this, we came to the conclusion that intentional is a very limited subset, basically addresses the similarities between Latin, Greek, and Cyrillic, but doesn't go beyond that. And you pointed out there were some Arabic cases as well. So something between confusables and intentional is probably the ideal case. But we cannot use confusable because it goes beyond scripts, right? It uses symbols and other things that are not permitted by IDNA standards. So if we are not going to address the whole, I mean, one, the problem is very limited. There are what we deem corner cases. Two, we're not going to solve every single one of them. So why do we want to impose more requirements? Because ultimately, the registrars will have to develop these, right? And so why do we want, if we, what, I mean, these are corner cases, we won't be able to solve all of them. Why do we want to impose more restrictions into IDN registries? And also, I'm concerned, right, that this is, we're not addressing Latin, for example. So I think we would be sending mixed messages as to how we want to treat this. I mean, we want to treat this for IDNs, but not for ASCII registration. So that's where I'm not comfortable as enforcing this more than I may.
Okay. I kind of wanted to put myself in the queue, but I guess I'll go after Samad since I see your hand is up already. But I want to note that Satish's comment on the chat. I think we're already talking about new registrations at this point. I think there is a case for a stronger formulation, but and that relates a bit to the ASCII world as well. So I'll go to Samad and then I'll put myself in the queue. Samad?
I actually wanted to make a separate point. So Edmund, why don't you go ahead and then I'll come back.
Okay. So I guess this is really one area that we should think through. I mean, this is probably the case that started the whole IDN implementation guidelines, the infamous paper, thought experiment. It never happened, actually. Some people thought it did. and whether this is something that we need to deal with, and I think Dennis makes a pretty good point in terms of let's say using O and L and zeros as today we don't require any whole label evaluation roles to ASCII. Are we over concerned about something that we really shouldn't be? Because if that happens, again, there are other mechanisms like the dispute resolution processes that should kick in to address those issues rather than having these type of rules in place, because there may be cases where no confusion happens. And also there are other operational issues for registries as well, whether this is this should be a must. And I think unfortunately we don't have Cal on the call as well, because I think he can probably add to that. So I think we probably need to come back to this, especially with Matt and Cal not on the call today. We'll probably need to come back to this section, but I see someone's hand up. I wanted to emphasize one point, is that this is an important section, and we throughout the the history of the IDN implementation guidelines, we've come back to this question every time, basically. So the question, we really should think through. In the case of, a PayPal kind of case, or you use a full, use another example with a full Greek homoglyph string, whether we want the policies in terms of registration, operational registration policies, to immediately identify and kick it out, or do something about it, or it should be allowed to register, or technically, and other mechanisms of confusability, if such confusability happens, an attack actually happens, would kick in. So we should really think through the actual case and how registries operationally need to deal with this, not just on a theoretical policy concept. So that's my view of this. So I think what Dennis mentioned is very legitimate, and we have operational experience for over 10 years now, and so far at least there isn't such a big of a concern. That doesn't mean we ultimately would decide that way, but I'll go to Samad first. So I'll stop here. But the key aspect is we need to think through this with some operational consideration as well. Samad?
Thank you, Edmund. So I think having again heard Dennis's argument, I think one of the cases which then can be made here is that even though we are saying that these are homoglyph, you know, whole label, whole script confusables, homoglyphs themselves are not something which is very, you know, I guess exactly defined. So there will be gray areas and things like that where it creeps into similarity cases. So in that sense, I think then may actually be reasonable unless we can find a very crisp definition of homoglyphs, which is probably not going to happen. So you know, hearing Dennis's argument in that sense, I think you know, May would be a good start, and then I guess we will also be sending this out for public comments. So I guess we will also, in case there is the technical community thinks or feels more strongly about this, I guess they would have a chance to come back and let us know as well. So I guess what I am saying is that, you know, May is a good start for those reasons. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And I see Satish note that you know, I guess agreeing to the point that we should probably defer this to next call. And based on what someone just mentioned, I think we'll keep it as is. We'll park this. We'll come back to it. Samad, is that new hand or is that old hand? Okay. In that case, it seems natural to continue on to the limitations section rather than jump to the 2.10. So why don't, since I kind of drafted it, why don't I get going with this, and we'll spend about 10 minutes on this. And probably, you know, leave about 5 to 10 minutes on preparing for Copenhagen. If that's okay. Hearing no objection to it. So in terms of the limitations of IDN tables and policies, in fact, it flows on from the discussion we just had. We understand that there are cases where LGRs and IDN tables and policies are not going to cover everything. We moved the last sentence of the first section to the first sentence of this section as a starting point, so that the exceptions for mixing scripts is allowed, and you know there are where there are clearly defined policies, and then we also added I just added a very simple sentence to talk about considering policies for visually confusable characters within the same script, which is a similar situation. Then basically ending with the example of the Latin LDH repertoire. We need to find a consistent way of describing this, perhaps. We sometimes talk about ASCII, we sometimes use different ways of saying that, but Salma can help us with identifying what the previous VIP documents summary, the study reports actually recommend describing it, and use that consistently. But the point is that ending with an example that the LDH repertoire also have a certain confusable ones, and therefore, you know, other policies have been effectively applied to mitigate certain issues. So IDNs, just because there are characters in IDNs that may be visually confusable, doesn't mean that it should be, doesn't mean that it needs to be handled with an IDN LGR or table a policy. That's the idea. Any thoughts or comments or questions about the section? Samat? Go ahead.
Okay, just a minor point here. I think the first half of this is more of a guideline, and then the second half, starting from the nevertheless, is more of a, explanation. So it may actually be, make it more readable if you can somehow split that in two parts or make the second part sort of, say it out that that's sort of a note on the first part or something like that.
Thank you. Agreed. So we'll just move it to a separate paragraph. That should suffice unless you think an additional sentence to highlight that is necessary. Yeah, I think probably just moving it to a separate paragraph should suffice.
Yeah. Maybe saying instead of nevertheless, maybe it should be noted or something to that effect when we move it to next paragraph. But again, that's just wordsmithing. I think we can probably do that.
Probably adding a few words to the effect that, this is more of an explanation sort. I get that. I think that's a good idea. I'll on it and add that particular part. Any other thoughts or comments? If not, I guess since we don't have a big group here today, we'll probably quickly jump back to these parts next time with emphasis on the cross-strip homoglyph labels and then further on to 2.10. But before we close today, perhaps I'd like to look a little bit at the calendar. We continue to try to push this out at some point in time, hopefully as a public comment draft. But how many meetings do we still have before we get to Copenhagen? Samat, do you?
So we have 16th, 23rd, and 2nd.
So just three more meetings before the before Copenhagen. Let's see. We still have 2.8 and 2.9 completely open. We have 2.10 that we need to come back to. I guess all the others are... We have
2.10 is minor. I think we've already closed 2.10 in our last discussion.
Okay. Two point six. I just recalled that I was supposed to draft something, right?
Right. If you go to the next page, there is a recommendation you have which we still need to discuss on automatically activating variants.
Right.
So that's one part which is still left.
Right. Okay. So we have three more meetings, and we have 2.8, 2.9, and probably you need to jump back to 2.6, and there are a couple things on 2.7. do people think let's take a look at 2.8 and 2.9 then.
So Edmund, sorry to interrupt, but these two points were raised during I-1055, and we still need to discuss and decide whether there are any recommendations here which we want to make. It was not clear whether there is anything to do here or not. So that's something we need to discuss.
Thank you. So we have about 10 minutes left for this week. Perhaps the best way to use this time is to, why don't we jump to 2.9? I wonder if Satish or Dennis has any thoughts on that quickly. And I guess I'll start with my observation. We, 2.8, I'll start with 2.9 first. I think the most that we can talk about in 2.9 is to say something to the effect that the policies or whatever is done in terms of registration should be able to be expressed in EPP in some form. And that's useful for both GTLDs and CCTLDs. Anything beyond that is probably beyond the scope of this group. So as much as I mentioned that what we can say is that, you know, this registration stuff should be able to be expressed in EPP, I'm not sure that's valuable enough to add into this particular document. Again, Cal and Matt should add to this. I see Samad's hand up, but let me briefly touch on 2.8 as well. And for 2.8, I think again it's almost similar to 2.9. Again, I think the bulk of what we can say about it within the scope of what we're doing is just that the data needs to be able to be represented in certain standard forms as the provision is happening or as the request for information is happening. I think we can almost think about collapsing them if we, in fact, want to say anything about it. That's my immediate thought. And somehow I see some hand is down again. Probably that was an old hand. And given that, I wonder, Dennis or Satish or Samad, has any thoughts about 2.8 and 2.9?
Yes, I do, Edmund. Thank you. And I drop a few minutes, my connection drop. So on EPP, I think you already touched on this, but I think I missed the portion of whether during the I-1055 session was more specific as to what the community wanted us to look at on the guidelines from an EPP standpoint.
This is Edmund again. Samad, if you can dig up the notes, but if my recollection is correct, it was just raised as a point that we should look into. I don't think there were any specifics. And as I explained, I think to me, all we can say is to make sure that whatever tables and policies you put in place, the provisioning process should be able to be expressed in EPP in some way. But it's probably not a very strong guideline at all.
Okay, thank you.
Samad, I don't know whether you recall what the...
Right, I do recall, and as I just said in the chat box, it was not a specific suggestion. It was just very generic comment about EPP. And so there's nothing we can, take out from that particular comment, except if we make a very generic guideline. So nothing specific from the community. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So, looking back at, again, planning ahead, if we have three more meetings, in order for us to actually put out a draft that could be put out for comments, we will definitely have to have all the substantive discussion finished by the end of next meeting. And if we use another two meetings for finalizing the wording that will go out, we would probably have a fighting chance to have something out by Copenhagen, but I would suggest that we do not put it out for public comments before Copenhagen. Just for optics' sake, it's usually not very good to put out a document for public comment so close to an ICANN meeting, but rather circulate it and solicit feedback at the ICANN meeting and put it out for public comments immediately after. That's that would kind of be my suggestion. But to know that we would have a finalized almost finalized version before Copenhagen as a target. Do people think that is sensible, Dennis or Samar or Satish?
Edmund, I agree with your approach of circulating the draft among our colleagues and then get some feedback that we can discuss also during the open session.
Thank you. But unlike last couple of tries, we are talking about, really finalizing almost most of the things that we want to put out, rather than relatively open last. So with that in that case, Sama, do we know what the schedule is looking like for Copenhagen? Do we have a time slot for how many time slots do we have? I guess we
right.
would want a public and one working group meeting if possible.
Right, so there is a 1-hour, 15-minute slot on Sunday, which I'm scheduling. I'm trying to get it done in the evening or late afternoon on Sunday, which is 12th of March. And then there is
That is the group meeting.
Yes, that's a working group meeting with the community. As Satish is saying, it's currently scheduled at 9 a.m., but I am actually already put in a request to make it a afternoon slot on Sunday. That's when it's likely to happen. And then on Wednesday morning, we will also have an opportunity to do a 5-minute or, about a 7-minute, 7 to 10-minute update during the IDN program update session to the larger community, which is not attending the specific session of the working group on Sunday. So there are going to be one short presentation during the IDN session on Wednesday morning, and then a complete date session dedicated to the working group on Sunday afternoon.
Okay, got it. So, in general, I guess we're looking at a more thorough walkthrough on the Sunday and a more summary, more of a summary for the Wednesday meeting. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds like a reasonably good plan. And not quite at the top of the hour yet, but it's just a few minutes from there.
Right.
So
and I can, once we have the guidelines, I can put the slides together and share that with the working group as well for both the sessions for review and finalization. I guess we can do that once we've gone through the rest of the recommendations. So if we don't do anything for 2.8 and 2.9, I think the only task left is then this recommendation on activation. And then I think after that, we are done. So though that's the only thing which is left.
Okay. So in that case, I guess the action item is actually for me to go back to 2.6 and take a look at updating that and then bringing back to for next week. We need to come back to the cross script homoglyph and limitations part, and as mentioned, 2.8, 2.9, and 2.10. So I think unless there is any burning issues, hearing none, thank you everyone for taking time, and talk to you all next week.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.